Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And this is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. We're not going to be silenced, not today, not ever. I want to thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in this platform. I'm here today with in full swing with Eric the Tech. Eric the Tech is back from it was an assassination duty. I'm not sure what he was doing. No, he was taking care of some other business, and he's back today, and we're back in full swing. So good evening, everyone. Thanks for being with us. All right. HagmanReportLive.com, video, audio. I know that there were some issues with HagmanReportLive.com of late. We've been working with the ISP on this, and I apologize for that. It's slow to load, and it is, 17, 23 seconds at times, 28 seconds. And I apologize for that. Some resources expended, messages saying, hey, you know, your resources are gone, basically. Well, I'll tell you what, we have been, because this is a proprietary server, I mean, elsewhere, but it's a proprietary server, we're working the bugs out of this, but we're getting hammered by denial of service attacks, of course, you know, from interesting places. We were able to trace them, but we wouldn't be getting that if we weren't over the target. And I want to thank everyone for helping us fly over the target and remain over the target. HagmanReportLive.com, there it is on your screen. There you'll find the full episodes, popular segments, audio, video, whatever you'd like. HagmanReportLive.com, HagmanReport.com for print. That's HagmanReport.com for print. And folks, please do me a favor. You know, Thanksgiving is coming up next month. Can you believe that already? I mean, wow. Well, I'll tell you what, election night's coming up. Now, if you're a conservative, chances are you're not going to be hitting the bottle necessarily. Like the left would, you know, drowning their sorrows and such in spirits, right? So if you're conservative, do me a favor and get some coffee ready for our election night. I have a feeling it's going to be not just one night, but, multiple nights. Go to HagmanStore.com. That's HagmanStore.com, where you can get the hypercaffeinated detective's choice, my favorite, whole bean, ground or K-cups, all three types, all three blends. That's Detective's Choice on your screen. And then, of course, we have Patriot and Revolution blends. The Detective's Choice hypercaffeinated, the darker of the three. Okay, so the darker of the three. And then it goes downward from there. But they're all relatively, they're all on the right-hand side of the dark spectrum. So thank you for doing that. Excuse me. COVID. Yeah. All right. Over 6,000 scientists, doctors sign anti-lockdown position. This and Summit News. Over 6,000 scientists and doctors have signed a petition against coronavirus lockdown measures, urging that those not in the at-risk category should be able to get on with their lives as normal. And that lockdown rules in both the United States and the UK are causing irreparable damage. Gee, you think? You think? And more than that, Dr. Richard Proctor is going to tell us how unconstitutional they are. By the way, see, I just don't talk the talk, I walk the walk. Here's the Liberty series. You can't see them very well on your screen, but here's three of the six volumes. The other three are on my desk, but there they are. Bathroom Economics, another book, Saving the Constitution, of course, is the primary book. And yes, I'm going to keep talking about everyone should buy the book. I am. You know why? Because a lot of times we think we know something and we don't. And I'm guilty of that. You think you know something? You think you know, oh, the 20th Amendment? I know that. Whoops. No, I really don't know that. How many amendments are there? 52? 57. I've read all 57 amendments. And I've been to all 57 states. Come on, guys. Laugh or something. Gee whiz, the studio audience is quiet. Tell you what. Okay, so real quick, before I get to Dr. Richard Proctor, who's going to be with me the entire show today, because we got some stuff to talk about. Did you know that Russian's president, Vladimir Putin, has praised the ideological similarities and links between the left here in America and Soviet communism? Huh? Huh? Don't forget, Putin is KGB. Former KGB. You know, whatever it is now. Okay, so he's still what he was. By the way, social networking is getting really out of hand. Facebook owned Instagram has banned QAnon accounts. But you know what? They're keeping all of the ISIS accounts. Yeah, that's good. One more thing, and then I'm going to go over to Dr. Proctor here. This is something that people should pay attention to. I don't know whether you saw President Trump's tweets. Again, COVID. I don't know whether you saw President Trump's tweets, but he sent out a tweet yesterday. He went on this epic tweet storm, I got to tell you, that targeted officials within the executive purview, all right, within the executive branch, but within the executive purview. The intelligence apparatus specifically, here's a tweet he sent out. I have fully authorized, you ready for this? You hate it when I do that, don't you? I know. I have fully authorized the total declassification of any and all documents pertaining to the single greatest political crime in American history, the Russia hoax. Likewise, the Hillary Clinton email scandal. No redactions. Exclamation point. Now, there were other, I call them sub-tweets. I don't know what you call them. Paul Sperry. I think he retweeted Paul Sperry. Yeah, I guess that's what it looks like. When all of the documents are finally declassified, said Sperry, and all of the redactions removed from the reports, the nation will see that the FBI and CIA not only knew Russia collusion allegations against Trump were a political dirty trick, but they were in on the trick. Now, very quickly, there is a distinction between authorizing the declassification and ordering the declassification. Sundance, the conservative treehouse, points this out in a column from yesterday. Again, he writes, Sundance writes this, one important note of caution. There's a big difference between authorized and ordered. On May 23rd of this past year, 2019, I'm sorry, President Trump authorized AG Barr to declassify all documents, and despite much optimism, nothing friggin' happened. Now, I paraphrased there, of course. However, President Trump references that lack of inaction. He references that in the next series of tweets. Now, hang on. All Russia hoax scandal information was declassified by me long ago. Then where in the hell is it? That's me saying that, not him. And don't tell me not to yell in the comments. I'll yell if I want to. It's my show. Get your own show. Unfortunately, for our country, people have acted very slowly, especially since it's perhaps the biggest political crime in the history of our country. Act. Act. Exclamation point. Exclamation point. Exclamation point. I guess he really meant that. Three exclamation points. No emojis. And I don't do emojis. I don't read hieroglyphics. I don't do emojis. Emojis to me are for snowflakes. Okay. Don't send me a tweet with a little, you know, something I look at it. What the hell is that? Is he giving me the finger or what?
It's a winky face.
Oh my gosh. Use your words, folks. Okay. COVID. All right. Dr. Richard Proctor. I wasted enough of your time. How you doing?
Good. It's a good day. Glad to be back here on Wednesday where I belong. Wednesday's a good day.
Oh, man. Bitching me out right now, aren't you? You're yelling at me now.
Yeah. No, I just get all enthused and carried away and start talking really fast. Nobody can understand what I'm saying. But other than that, everything works well.
I'm glad you're here. You know, we have to talk. Pull up a chair because we got to talk, you and me. The hell's going on here, Dr. Proctor, with, first of all, folks, saving the Constitution, buy it. Do it now, buy it. Do I have to say that one more time? Saving the Constitution, buy it. And for extra credit, or for normal credit, buy the Liberty series. And if you want to know what the economy would, I'm going to tell you. Oh my goodness. Bathroom Economics, go ahead and buy that book and give it to your husband, wife, child, stepson, stepdaughter, aunt, uncle, representative. Wow.
You know, yeah. If more politicians had the Bathroom Economics book and they felt like more people knew what Bathroom Economics taught, a lot of economic things wouldn't happen.
Right.
They wouldn't happen.
Well, yeah. You know, it's, you know, the push now is on for digital money. Now, I mean, it seems to me, doctor, and feel free to, look, I don't know what you want to talk about. You can talk about whatever you want to talk about. We can sit here and talk about our dogs. I mean, I could talk about my dog for 3-4 hours at least. But anyway, so I'm going to give you this airtime for your topics. But with respect to, what I'm seeing right now, there's two things I'm seeing and, I'm going to leave it at this. Two things I'm seeing right now. Well, actually three. President Trump was, since we last spoke, President Trump was diagnosed with COVID, tested positive, supposedly, allegedly, reportedly, ostensibly, whatever other Italy you want to put in there, went to Walter Reed and's back. Okay. And he was treated with this very serious and odd combination of drugs. Now I got to say this. I wouldn't put it past the people in power that there's a time bomb in there somewhere. In mid-October, he might relapse and have to go back. And people are going to say, see, you need the mask. You need the social distance. You need to not stay at home. You need to whatever. Okay. That's number one. Number two, we are moving toward a digital currency faster than I can think. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And I'm going to tell you, it's coming. And it's bad because I looked through the saving the Constitution and the Constitution. I didn't see anything about the digital currency in there at all. In fact, when they printed it up MacBook Pro, anyway, that's the second thing. And the third thing I forgot already. So, the third thing is, oh hell, I don't know what I was going to say. Oh, the third thing is the declassification. I really think that is a blowback to recent happenings against President Trump. Now, having said all of that, I'm done. The program is yours. Go on, carry on.
Press on. Okay, let me just visit about the COVID thing for President Trump. Went to Walter Reed. Got treated by the garbage rather than a safe treatment. been smarter to have gone to a quack somewhere. You know, I can't say the word very well. Hydrochloride, quinine, or some such thing. I've had doctors report to me that it's 100% successful, but that the FDA have stopped allowing them to do it. The FDA stopped allowing them to prescribe the medicine that saves their patients, that treats their patients, that cures their patients. They can figure out something.
That's hydroxychloroquine, HCQ. How I remember it is just HCQ. That's all.
I can remember that. Yeah. I can even say that. HCQ is easy.
Yeah.
That other long word of 25 letters is tough for me.
I hear you.
But anyway, see, so if he get out of the hospital, go get some proper treatment, you'll be safe. Stay in the hospital and get the treatment these guys are going to give you. Well, not. There's a little under the table kind of thing that I think about. Physicians who are teaching us to have unsafe treatment could give treatment that would not only cause him to have more problems, but might not even live. Could they not? Oftentimes, you and I don't know what we're being given by doctors. And
there's a whole lot of trust there, isn't there?
If there's an enemy in the batch here somewhere that wants him out of there, they just set up a way, didn't they? I mean, folks, we're living in a dangerous world. We really are. Assassination? Oh, no, I didn't say that word. Anyway, next. You talked about digital currency.
One thing, if I can just piggyback on that, I lied about saying, you know, I wasn't going to say anything, but I lied. I really believe Alex Jones came out with a 9-minute audio video on the 3rd. And I've heard from people saying this is not going to age well. No, I think it's going to age perfectly. He said exactly what you said. That, you know what, assassination, what a perfect way to do this and make a point and scare the American public, you know. Look, you know, coronavirus, the Chinese Communist Party virus, it is a thing. But you're right, HCP, that drug it works most of the time.
Sure.
Anyway, go ahead. Assassinate. Think assassination, folks. I'm telling you, I don't like what I'm seeing at all. But thank you for bringing that up.
Possibilities are really there, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Next, the digital currency that you mentioned. You know, we worry about the value of our currency. Constitution says Congress shall coin, and today they would say print, coin or print the money, and... Now, there's a semicolon there, really. Control the value thereof. Control the value. So all the money in the United States should be printed, coined by the U.S. government, not some foreign entity called the Federal Reserve, should be coined and printed, and Congress is supposed to control the value of it in relationship to foreign currencies and our own economy. That's what it says very clearly, paragraph 5, section 8, volume of article 1. What does control the value means? Control the value means control the amount of money printed. That's how you control the value. Digital currency. Who's in charge of that? Whoever wants to be. What country's in charge of it? Whichever wants to be. Who's the ultimate authority? European financiers that control our Federal Reserve as well. So digital currency under the control of government or world government would be literally prone to complete inflation if they wanted to destroy us economically. Digital currency is a path to destroy the country also. But in this case, the world, because the digital currency will go everywhere once the power, international banking establishment, gets control of it, the power will be unlimited. Give me control the money, I control the country. And that's absolutely true. So digital currency is a path to get us under the thumb of the rest of the world, and the rest of the world, I should say, under the thumb of the international banking establishment, which are the Rothschild families and the Lazard families, Kuhn-Loeb families, Harriman families. They're all listed. Many of them are listed in Volume 1 on the preface. Those people would have complete control of every economy in the world. How do you like that? Just think about that for a minute. You're giving your control. No, it's being taken. We're not giving it. It's being taken from us. By who? The United Nations and those that are a part of it. Oh, folks, you know, I don't mean those that are part of it by membership. I mean those that are part of it by ownership. Ownership of the United Nations. Next, this classification stuff. It's all political. He may tell them to do it, but they decide. Isn't it interesting how the president can give instructions and they'll choose to ignore them because it's not for their good. I don't want to. I mean, Obama put out directives about elementary schools, kids' schools, and bathrooms and that kind of stuff. Okay? Trump came in and he said, no, let's not do that anymore. That's bad. Let's not do that. A lot of schools said, no, I'm going to keep on doing it. I don't care. A lot of states, we're going to keep on doing it. I don't care. That's where we are today. We have elected, we haven't elected, but a president has been elected to honor. Well, we did elect Trump. We did. That's when we did elect. So here's a president we did elect, trying to give good guidance so that our lives could be better. And those who are on the side of evil say, nope, I'm not going to do that. This classification, the people of America need to know what that stuff says. He suggests it, releases it, authorizes it, but they won't do it. And I'll lay you diamonds to donuts, okay, or dollars to donuts, whatever the right word is, that if he orders it, there will be people in his establishment that will say, no, we're not going to do it. That's where we are today. We think he's in charge. He's not in charge, you guys. The bureaucracy's in charge. And they pick and choose what they want to do of his direction. That's the political side of political economics. That's why it's so important. They go together. Politics is one thing, economics is another, but the two of them together paint the picture. Paint a picture more than you've ever thought of. You know, folks, we've been talking for the last several weeks about all the problems that this COVID-19 is causing, all the problems that our governments are causing us, all the lockdowns, all the contact tracings, all the spatial distancing, all the social, all of these things. We've been talking about it. We've been talking about the laws that the governors and the city councils and the county commissioners are all violating and what to do about it. And I've talked about the militia over and over again. People have said, what can we do? What can we do? You know, I want to take this from a different bend today, a different direction. Ponder, what can we do? We are a nation of hate today. Everybody hates everybody. I'm astounded at the hatred. There's an article, the article by Michael Snyder yesterday, the hatred that's going on in the United States against each other. We don't have people just disagreeing. We have them taking out knives, guns, or clubs and beating people to death if they don't agree. We have people arguing over minute points. Let's just take Christianity, for example. The base of Christianity is Jesus Christ. Now, some of us, I'm of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I have different beliefs than the Baptists, the Lutherans, the Methodists. I have different beliefs. But we're all Christians. We're all centered in Christ. The differences in our theology, our doctrine, aren't nearly as important as united under Jesus Christ. I've talked to a lot of the people who call in, and all of them are members of other churches. And we've had excellent spiritual conversations, excellent conversations. There's no reason for us to get all bent out of shape because someone believes one thing and someone believes another. They're all focused in Jesus Christ. Let's keep that focus. I'm going to recommend something. Let's have a Be Kind week, whole week, 5 days, 7 days, whole week. Let's start it this coming Sunday, a Be Kind week. Be kind to everybody you see. Make nice comments to people. Tell people that you know how nice they are. Tell people that are strangers how nice they look today. Just tell people how nice, how good it is, how nice it is. Isn't it wonderful to live here? Just talk nice to everybody. I mean, I was on a walk through a wilderness park here in Utah up in the mountains. And we were going around the lake. Now, we weren't passed by very many people. But now I didn't mean to do this so I could say something. I meant to do this because I meant to do it. Every time somebody passed, I looked what they had, what they were doing, what they were with. In fact, one group was with, had fishing poles. When I got up to them, I looked one of the young ladies in the eye. I says, you know, the lake is clear over there, half a mile away. You're going to have a long cast. Everybody chuckles. It's nice. Dogs came by. I stopped to pet every dog that came by. Hi, guy. How are you doing? I've told one guy his dog had a perm before he came. Just nice conversation with everybody. I saw Sheltie. Oh, I like Sheltie dogs. I went down to visit with the Sheltie dog and the people there. I want to tell you, those people backed away when I got too close to them. And I thought, what a poor situation. But I didn't say anything. I just talked to the dog and enjoyed it, talked with them about their dog.
Probably made more sense talking to the dog, but that's just me. Go ahead.
I did talk to the dog too, yes. He and I communicated. He wagged his tail, I patted his head, and we visited. We need to have a week of just all of us just being kind to everybody we see, period. Just be kind. Say nice things. You're in church this week. Walk up to someone and say, you know, I really appreciate the input you did in Sunday school class. Or if they didn't do it, don't say it. But say something that they did do, something that's nice. You are sure doing a good job of raising your children. I am really pleased with the behavior I see of your children. Things like that. Just talk nice. Oh, you look nice today. Forget all the sarcasm. Don't use that. Just talk nice. Let's just be nice. Let's have a nice week. Get rid of the hate. Wouldn't that be nice to just get rid of some of the hate? You say nice things to someone. Go ahead.
I just want to say this. When my daughter was probably not quite a year old, my daughter Jackie, who's married to Eric the Tech, this is back in 92, we took a flight to Florida. I had to go on business, and I took my wife and my daughter with me, and it was a two and a half hour flight. Okay, now she's a year old, okay, and normally a year old on a plane, not a good combination. And I mean, I'm going to tell you what, doctor, she was just absolutely, and I'm not saying this because I'm her dad, but she was the most well-behaved child. The stewardess, that's what I'm going to call her because that's what she is. She came up and she said after the flight was over, she said, you know, I've been doing this for X number of years and whatever. She said, you've got the best behaved child I've ever seen. And the guy sitting in the other row said the same thing. And I felt that made me feel really, really good. I mean, it really made me feel good. Being complimented as a parent. So I guess I said all that to say this. What you're telling people to do or advising people to do can change. I mean, I remember this 38 years later. How old is she? 30 years later, whatever it was. But I remember that. So you are, thank you for, I appreciate you doing that. I appreciate you saying that. I mean, everyone doesn't have to be Bob Ross all the time, you know, a happy little accent, but it's nice to do that. Thank you. Thank you. Because we need more of that. Because my default setting is angry and I got to change that. You're right. Thank you. Go ahead.
I want to mention something else. To those who can afford it, there are many people today that cannot afford the necessities because of all these lockdowns, and they're having trouble in life. Again, I got to be very careful how I phrase these things, because I don't want anybody to think that I'm holding myself above anybody else. But I was in the line, oh, it's been a few months ago, and there was a lady in front of me, older lady, right directly in front of me. And the cashier and her were trying to work out how to pay for her groceries. What could she actually keep, what she had to give back, because she didn't have enough money. And I saw that. They were counting pennies and dimes and nickels. So I walked up. I just walked up to the cashier, and I said, put all those pennies, dimes, and nickels away. I'm paying for her groceries. And I did. The whole batch, everything. Now, I don't know what that meant to her. It meant a lot to me. I still feel good about it. I still get choked up for the help I was able to provide her. I don't know who she was. Nice person. I don't know who she was. I never refer. When I go up to somebody, I say, oh, it's good to see you, young lady. It's nice to see you. And she's 90. She laughs at me, but she's not upset. I called her young lady. I never call anybody old lady or old man. No. I'm not ever going to say that. Don't care if they're 105. Young lady, you look fine today. Talk to people nicely. Let's try to get some of this hate out. But especially, let's get this hate out from among Christians. Let's stop dilly-dallying and pulling it at gnats, while in fact the important stuff is our Savior, Jesus Christ. Let's put him forefront, and let's all of us, different denominations, come together. We have our own beliefs. I'm not going to say anybody should change anything. Just be nice between each other. That's the right way, guys. That's the American thing. I didn't mean to go on that long, but folks, it's important. It's important.
100% agree with you. Go ahead.
Next sentence. We've been talking, like I started out here, we've been talking about a lot of stuff that's bugging us, and it's bad. Oh, it's bad. But everybody's talking about the bad stuff. So let's go right back to the original stuff that I started with back with Doug here the 1st of April. And with David Knight, June of last year, let's just talk a little bit about the Constitution itself. We haven't talked about this for a long time, so let's spend a minute. I want to start with Article 5. You guys remember Article 5? It's in that little handbook you've got, and it's got only one section, one paragraph. It's not huge. Probably only about 200 words. I didn't measure them, but probably. We read that and think we know what it says. Scholars read that and think they know what it says. Let's just look at it closely for a minute. Get your book out, if you've got one. Listen closely whether you have or not. The Congress. See that? It's the Congress. Whenever two-thirds of both houses deem it necessary. That's the Congress shall propose amendments to this Constitution. Okay, now that's the Congress. That's the people through the Congress, but it is the Congress. Then it has a interesting punctuation mark. There's a comma. And then there's an or and another comma. And here it goes on this, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states. Aha, now we have the legislatures proposing amendments. On the application of legislature of two-thirds of the states, they shall call a convention. Who shall call a convention? The Congress shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case, now here's how you're going to ratify them. In either case, shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the states. That's how it's approved. After the word three-fourths of the states, there's another comma and another or. And it says, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof. Thereof means 3/4 of the states. Now, just a minute. Let's break that down a little bit. The Congress calls, when there are 2/3 of those people up, they do it. They can propose an amendment. We got to ratify it. The states can propose, apply to Congress to call a convention, and that's how the states get involved. But it's back to Congress. Congress shall call. But the second or says, by conventions in 3/4 thereof, which is 3/4 of the states. And then it repeats ratification, as one or the other modes of ratification may be proposed by Congress. Now, just a cotton picking minute here. Did you hear 2 times it talked about how they're going to be ratified? But it has 3 separate modes. One, the Congress does by itself and asks everybody to do it. The second one, the states ask the Congress to call a convention to do it. And the third one are states individually doing it as states, and they don't ask Congress for anything. In 1787, the convention concluded its business, sent this constitution to the State Department, government. They then sent it out to the states. All the states held conventions in their state. They ratified it, or they ratified it with conditions. They sent the letter sent back to Congress, and that went back to the convention. Do you hear how that just happened? What happened was the states in conventions thereof in their states ratified it individually. That's a convention of states. A convention of states, today's definition, is a whole bunch of people in Washington, D.C., or someplace like that, deciding. But nothing's occurring in the state itself by the people in the state. You see, these state conventions, they elect people to go to that convention, select people perhaps, to go to that convention. Then they do what they're supposed to do, and then they go home. It's done. They don't go somewhere else. Virginia did it in Virginia. New York did it in New York. So if we're going to do a convention of states, convention of states now, it's what the or says. The or says, or by conventions in 3/4 thereof. Those are conventions of states, and they are in the states. Today's analysis, when these people are trying to get a new constitution and this one thrown out, they're calling it a convention of states, and they're saying, we're going to have a convention of states, and we're all going to meet in Washington. That's not a convention of states. That's Congress going to call for a convention. That's number 2, not number 3. But they're using the wording of number 3 to deceive us. If we had conventions in the states, we would select the people here in Utah. You would select the people in Iowa. You would select the people in Oklahoma. And those people would meet in Iowa, Oklahoma, and Utah and make a proposal. And if 3/4 of those states all agree, that is an amendment to the Constitution, period. But I bet you if you tried to do it today, that the Supreme Court would throw it out as unconstitutional. Now, let's talk a little bit about the history of why that probably occurred, those writing, those words, that way, why it probably occurred. You've all heard of the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists in the ratification process. Many define that as people who are for the Constitution and people who are against the Constitution. That's not correct. Anti-Federalists were people that were for the Bill of Rights. Federalists were not for the Bill of Rights. That's a better way to put it. See, the Federalists wanted a strong central government. The states wanted a smaller central government and stronger states. They saw that the Bill of Rights would give more power back to the states, especially 9 and 10. They wanted those because they saw that power in the states. The Federalists didn't want the Bill of Rights because they saw 9 and 10, and they didn't want those things be taken away from the federal government. Those same people, not the same individuals, but those same types of people, Federalists and Anti-Federalists, also existed during the convention in Philadelphia, in the convention during Philadelphia. Some of the men in those conventions were Anti-Federalists, and some of them were Federalists, but they did not use that term. They used the term large states and small states. But the way it developed was large states were people for large central government, and small states were for small central government. And the biggest problem they had on this issue was representation in the House. They didn't have any problem with representation of the states in the Senate, of the states in the Senate, not the people, the states. They didn't have any problem with a selected number of people per representative, but they couldn't come up with a number. And they argued about that for all 3 months. All the time the convention was in session, they argued about that subject, and they almost stopped the convention and went home because of it. Madison, for example, and notice he's wrote the Federalist Papers. Madison was strong for big, strong central government, and he argued, we've got to have a big, strong central government. And the small state says, we ain't staying. So Madison had to give in. You can see this portrayed in the video, A Perfect Union. It's a good video. You can see it portrayed, and you can see some of that discussion. One guy's finally stood up, and I used to remember his name. I could look it back up again in a minute, because I can find it in my volume of the diaries of the minutes of the convention from the different people who wrote in the convention and the votes they made. I can look it back up and tell you who it was, but right now I don't have that in front of me. An individual stood up in the last week of the convention, said, let's use 30,000. And everybody breathed a sigh of relief because that would work. So they selected 30,000 as the number, and it's listed in Article 1 very precisely, 30,000 per representative. So everybody was happy, and it was signed. Now, we have something that passed. Everybody was happy. What was that date it was ratified? 1788? Then there was 1789. Then there was 1790. And the Federalist took over and changed the number from 30,000 to 50,000. And nobody complained. There was the first major violation of the Constitution. They changed the number to 50,000 just because that's what the big states wanted. Now, we're talking now about how many representatives how many people per representative. Even the list that occurred in the Constitution itself was not accurate to 30,000. They first set in 1790 used 50,000, not 30,000. I have a chart. This is in volume 6. I'm just going to run down it real quick. Not detailed. Just listen. 1800, that's a census. That's the census year. That's what the Constitution says. The number of representatives was 106. That's 50,000. What they should have had is 177. Let's go to 1830, just as a number. Should have had 213. What did they have? What should they have had? I'm sorry. Erase that. What they did have was 213. What they should have had was 429. Let's run up here to just before the Civil War, 1950. They did have 233. They should have had 773. Now we have the Civil War. I can't give you the information there very clearly because the census in 1860 is a little tough. But the census in 1870, we should have had 1,197. We did have 243 is what was there. 1,197 should have been. Let's move to 1920. We should have had 3,535. We did have 435. Why did I go to 1920? Because in 1929, somebody in Congress decided that the 435 was enough. We don't need any more. We don't want any more. The real decision was made by the Rothschild Group, the International Bankers Establishment. They couldn't control the group if it got too big. Look, the number should have been 3,075. Wait, 3,535 that year. You can't control 3,535, but it ain't too tough to control 435. You can't buy off and bribe 3,535, but you can bribe 435. So they kept the number 435. Now let's look what should have been. That was 1920. That's when they capped it. 1950 should have had 5,023. 1970 should have had 6,000. Yeah, 1970, 6,780. 2000, we should have had 9,381. By the way, we only have 435. 2010, we should have had 10,292. This year, we should have had in the neighborhood of 11,013.
If I can jump in here, Doctor.
Yes, jump right in.
You see this, folks? This is volume 6 of the Liberty series. So this is what Dr. Proctor, you can't see from the lights. I just hold it down a little bit. This is the second page of that chart that he referenced. Okay. If you have this in your hand, you'd know this. If you're homeschooling your children, you need these books, the Liberty series, along with Saving the Constitution. Go to provisinstitute.com. Yes, I'm absolutely asking you to do that. Please, provisinstitute.com. This, what you said, and as I was following along with you, this makes so much sense. And it does put into perspective the Federalists versus the Anti-Federalists, Madison's stance, Madison's argument. And the other gentleman was, I apologize. Drawing a blank.
Yeah.
But here, I mean, a lot of information. So, but yes, in the population, you're right. We're being screwed. So go ahead, continue. Thank you for allowing me to do this.
I only went into that because we were talking about how we do conventions in states and anti-federalists and federalists. The anti-federalists wanted, in the Constitution Convention now, they wanted a way to keep control of the House. They wanted a way to allow the states to propose and finalize amendments without Congress. That's the purpose. They wanted to have Congress out of the amendment process so the states could do it. That's the plan. Remember, the states were giving up power. They were giving up power and control to a federal government, and they didn't want too much of it taken. This was how they protected themselves from the federal government. Now, there's a Supreme Court, 1931, Sprague versus United States is what I believe it is, pretty sure. In that decision of the Supreme Court, this is what they said. They quoted Article 5, but they left out, in their decision on purpose, they left out the second comma before the or. So that deleted the Constitution, the state constitutions or the Constitution of the states. That deleted them. It made it one of the ratifying processes rather than a separate convention system. The Supreme Court did that. Sprague versus United States, 1931. Pretty sure that's right. You can check in volume 4. Look that up in volume 4. You can find it. Anyway, guys, that's what I'm trying to point out. Article 5. It's not so clear cut as everybody thinks it is. then everybody stops right there at that line. We're still in Article 5. They stop right there. And then they say, there's a semicolon after Congress when it finishes talking about the Convention of States. It says, provided that no amendment. Aha. Here's a condition for amendments. A condition for amendments. Provided that no amendment, which shall be made prior to the year 1808, shall in any manner affect the first and third clauses of the ninth section of the first article. Now, what do the first and third clauses of the ninth section of Article 1 say? That's about slavery. That was the other issue that almost destroyed the convention, slavery. Here's the problem. No matter how you did the counting for the House of Representatives, we're back to that same thing again. No matter how you did the counting, if you didn't count the slaves at all, it gave more power to the North. If you counted the slaves as one, it gave more power to the South. And neither of those state groups of states would give up their power. So they made an agreement. We'll count them as three-fifths. Why? So that they don't get a full count, but they don't get no count. You see? So the North gave up some, and the South gave up some. That was not a bad compromise. That was a good compromise, and that's why the compromise. I'll come back to the reason for it in a minute. Then they wrote in Section 9, things that you could not do to stop slavery before 1808. And then they wrote in Article 5, provided no amendment about slavery is published before 1808. Why is 1808 the magic date? What's magic about that date? Well, here we have it. The slaves. That's the slave issue. People are angry about the slaves. Today, really angry. Why did they give them three-fifths? They're not three-fifths people. They're real people. What's going on here? These guys didn't know what they were doing. Okay? That's how it was done today. What was happening was this. The southern states had those big plantations. They grew cotton and all these things on. They were collateralized, and if you understand that term, that means the banks loaned the money against them, against the value of the slaves. If the value of the slaves went away, the collateral of the loan went away, and the plantations reverted to the bank. What bank? The Bank of England. We just fought a civil war to get out of the British control, out from underneath British control, and now we're sitting down to do a constitution. If the slaves had been freed by that constitution, then all of the plantations of the South would have been foreclosed on and taken by the Bank of England. So we would have lost the entire economy of the South. It had gone back to England. We can't do that. We just fought a revolutionary war and people died for the protection. But the guys in the South said, we cannot pay for them. We cannot retire those debts right now. We can't do it immediately. We'll lose our plantations. And the guys in the North said, we understand that. So let's put a date. What date shall we choose? The guys in the South said, say what? We can have those slaves. We can have the plantations paid for on those loans in 20 years, 1808. That's when we'll do it. Anything, we'll start the first major step of not having slavery in 1808. So that's why 1808 was selected. That was the period of time they felt they would need to get out of the thumb of the Bank of England. So that's what they selected. And that was well done. That was something, that was a compromise that could be lived with both North and South. The problem was 1808 came and went, nobody paid any attention. And that was another major violation of the Constitution. Even though it's not written, just the date is written. It's written in two separate places, 1808. Very important date. It's in the Constitution, should be abided by the Constitution, and the rationale for abiding by the Constitution was what happened in the convention. And those people all knew it in 1808. But they didn't stop it. So we had a war later on. A part of that war was slavery, yes. The economics was the main purpose. Then the slavery became an issue. Remember the Civil War in that direction. Economics, a battle over trade, and then The states wanted one thing, the North wanted the other, and that's where the secession began. Then the slaves became a part of it a couple of years later. Now, there's another prohibition in Article 5. This is a discussion of Article 5, isn't it? Here's another prohibition. Provided that no amendment without the consent, I jumped down a little bit because I paid attention to commas there. Provided no amendment will mess around before 1808, and provided no amendment without its consent shall deprive, provided that no amendment will state, I got to put that in there because that's what it means. No amendment, no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. No state without its consent. It's a little hard to jump around in the paragraph, but that's what it says. You can read it closely and you'll see how it works. No state without its consent can be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. What did suffrage mean in those days? Voting. Women, suffrage. The women's suffrage movement was to get votes, to get the power to vote. So that says that no state without its consent, and it doesn't put a date on when that consent is, no state without its consent can lose its representation in the Senate. Remember, the federal government had three groups of people who organized it. The people, the states, well, I guess it's just two, the people and the states. That's who did it. The people had a representation, that was the House. The states had a representation, that was the Senate. The states wanted to protect themselves. That's why two from each state. The people wanted proper representation, and there was a population problem now. And they had big state New York, little state Delaware. What are we going to do? Rhode Island, even littler. They all had to have opportunity. So that's how the House was done. So the big states would have more votes than the little states, but the Senate gave the little states equal power. That was done that way on purpose. But the Senate says no state shall lose its representation in the Senate without its consent. That's what that last phrase says. But nobody even knows the phrase is there because the 17th Amendment's been passed, ratified, and everything, and it ignored that Article 5 completely and didn't even mention it in the 17th Amendment. So that amendment is illegal. It's contrary to the Constitution itself. And we're going to go to Article 6. We're going to find something in Article 6. We need to always remember Article 6. It says in Article 6, the very second paragraph, this Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made pursuant thereof, and all treaties which shall be made will be the law of the land. The treaties have to be in pursuant thereof also. That law of the land, that Constitution, will supersede amendments that are not correct in accordance with the Constitution also. Therefore, according to Black's Law Dictionary, which defines amendments, no amendment can change the original contract. Therefore, Article 5 precludes the 17th Amendment, 100%. And if any state had the gumption, they could go to Article 5. We are not giving our consent any longer. We will now appoint our senators in the mode of the Constitution. Have a nice day. And they could do it. It's completely constitutional. But they don't. And I just want to point out the 17th, of the states.
In the 17th Amendment, we talked about this before, was ratified in 1913. It was passed by Congress in 12 and ratified in 1913. So that time period in America's history, pay close attention to that over, you know, how we were overtaken by the cartel, by the deep state even back then. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. The 1913 was a vicious year for our country. Vicious year. If we could stop it, delete it, we would have a better country. We would have a better country. There would be no 16th Amendment. there would be no 17th Amendment. There would be no Federal Reserve. Those three things are the focal point of all the problems we have today.
And again, folks, Liberty Series. I don't mean to keep interrupting you, but this information, folks, is available in detail in the Liberty Series. I'm appealing to anyone who is homeschooling their children to invest in this. This is better than any set of encyclopedias, in my view, that you could ever buy. Any other history book or series of books, the Liberty Series, when it comes to the United States of America. If you're homeschooling here in the U.S., please, please purchase the series, especially if you're homeschooling your children. That's ProvisInstitute.com. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. And that's ProvisInstitute.com on your screen. That's what it looks like. Okay, sir, go ahead and continue.
That's very fine. That's that. Gave me a chance to move on to the next subject, because we got to have more than one subject here.
Sure.
This is not just a one subject business here. We're going to go to our 16th Amendment. Whoa. We just talked about the 16th and the 17th Amendment. So let's look at those two amendments. Let's look at those. 16th Amendment. I'm going to read to you the 16th Amendment. I'm using my book this time because I've got a couple things I want to reference. I could read it out of the Constitution. It's perfectly quoted. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes. That is precisely correct. Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 1. Okay? Precisely correct. The next part on incomes, oops, that was found to be unconstitutional by all of the Supreme Courts in the 1800s on incomes, right there. That started, that was the beginning change. That also was talked about in the convention itself. Madison stood up and said, if we tax the people directly, which means taxing the incomes, if we tax the people directly from the federal government to the people, we might as well stay with England. Because that's exactly what's going on between us and England. So if we're going to set up the same tax system, why are we doing this? Now, I've paraphrased what he said, but that is what he said. And I can see you could look it up in your own book, but you don't have one. I pulled this out of my five volume set of the deliberations of the convention. Anyway, next it says, from whatever source derived. That was another violation of the precedent set in the 1800s. Now, listen to the next words here. I'm reading the 16th Amendment. Without apportionment among the several states, and without regard to any census or enumeration. Now, let me read you what it says in Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3. Direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states. You notice the word apportioned there. Okay? Then further on in the same it states according to their respective numbers. Then further on it says the actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years of the meeting. Enumeration. So what we have is we have three instances I just quoted where it tells them that they cannot have taxes on the people, on their incomes. They cannot do it without apportionment. They cannot do it without regard to census. And they cannot not do it without enumeration. That 16th Amendment is completely unconstitutional. There's no other way to look at it. I wrote another one. I wrote the real one on the next page. The real one. The real one says, the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, no matter what the Constitution of the United States says. In other words, hang the Constitution, we're going to do it our way. That's what that amendment says, the 16th Amendment says. Hang the Constitution, we're going to do it our way. Then I spend several pages here showing how each one of these things came about. And I show a lot more of this information on the 16th Amendment in the volumes. The Liberty Series, a lot more time. You know, the Liberty, you got to remember that the Saving the Constitution is only 350 pages. I mean, I should have written a tome of, well, I did. I wrote a tome about it. It's called the Liberty series. Anyway, you got to write a tome to describe the Constitution to save it and about all the problems of it. But I didn't want to write a tome, so I just wrote a synopsis that would give people the idea. You want the background? The Liberty series has the background. All right. That's the 16th Amendment. It's completely unconstitutional. Don't worry about whether it was ratified or not. Note that it is illegal by the Black's Law Dictionary, which is the Dictionary of the Attorneys. And if you really want to know how the Black Law Dictionary is the Dictionary of the Attorneys, look at all the Supreme Court decisions in every definition in that book. Therefore, the Supreme Court gives its consent to Black's Law Dictionary. Therefore, amendments cannot change a contract. It says it. Even the Supreme Court has notations about that. An amendment can't change a contract. An illustration. I'm going to build a shed out in my backyard. This guy's going to charge me $6,000. Now, this is a real story. I'm building a shed in the backyard. It's going to cost $6,000. He's going to do it this summer. When he finishes, he'll present me for a bill for $6,000. But I'm going to say to him, no, 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 no. I decided to amend our contract. I'm only going to pay you $3,000. Too bad. You see how stupid it is to amend a contract? He may present me with a bill for $8,000. I'm going to say, oh, no, 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 no. I only agreed to $6,000. No, I amended the contract. It's $8,000. Now, that's just a very easily seen reason why contracts don't change. Amendments don't change contracts. You write a new one. You write a new one. So the 16th Amendment is changing the contract, therefore null and void, per James Marshall in Marbury versus Madison, which says anything not in accordance with the Constitution is unconstitutional. He said that in his own decision. Per that decision, the 15th Amendment is out of here. I mean, the 16th Amendment is out of here. Oh, my. What does that mean? That means that the state of Iowa, the state of Oklahoma, and the state of Utah, if their legislatures had enough guts and the people wanted it done, could pass a law the next session that says no citizen of this state shall fill out a 1040 for the IRS and present and send any money to the IRS. No company will take IRS deductions. No company will send IRS money to the federal government, tax money to the federal government. That's what that means. What that means is that your tax burden to the federal government would be zero. How about that?
We now, can do that, right?
We can do that. Yes, we can, but nobody seems to think it's good enough to do because nobody's changing their legislatures to be constitutionally minded people. They're leaving the old guys that's already screwed us in place rather than putting constitutional people in place to fix it. The definition of insanity is to continue to do the same thing and hope for a different outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have been incumbent after incumbent after incumbent. That's insanity because we want something different and we expect the same guy to do it. And he does what he did before. Folks, stop it. You're going to elect somebody. Don't elect an incumbent. Now, I know there are a couple out there that we should elect. Don't elect an incumbent. You lose 2 good ones, you get rid of 99 bad ones, or 100 bad ones, or 112 bad ones, or whatever number it is. You got the idea? The 16th Amendment. Let's look at what preceded the 16th Amendment that's also unconstitutional. Let's go to the 14th Amendment. Now, this preceded the 16th Amendment. The 14th Amendment. Wow, what we're doing today. Interesting. The 14th. We're going to read from the 14th Amendment. We're going to read very carefully in section 2 of the 14th Amendment. And at the same time, we're going to read from Article 1, section, well, maybe we get there, maybe. We're going to read from Article 1, section 2, paragraph 3 from the Constitution itself. Now we have the Constitution itself in one hand. We've got the 18th Amendment in another hand. Section 2. I'm going to read precisely from the Constitution and precisely from the 14th Amendment. It says, listen closely, guy. I'm going to give you a test. No person shall be a representative. Whoops. I've got to get this up. Paper clips in the way. Representatives, paragraph 3, article 1, representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states. Now let's go to the 14th Amendment. We're going to read that precisely, and I want you to, I'm going to test you on it. Representatives shall be apportioned among the several states. Did you hear a difference? Nobody's answering. Let's do this again.
All right.
Paragraph 3, Article 1, Section 2. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states. Section 2, Article of the 14th Amendment. Representatives shall be apportioned among the several states.
Okay.
Do you see three words missing?
Yeah, and that's direct taxes.
That is the beginning of putting direct taxes on the people, which Madison said, even though he was for central government, said is just like England is doing to us. Direct taxes on the people is what England's doing to us. We don't put that in. So they specifically said in the fourth paragraph of the Constitution, direct taxes will be apportioned among the states, not the people. That's what he said. That's what it says. It's the fourth paragraph of the Constitution. That was the first chink in the armor of direct taxes on the people and the 16th Amendment. The first chink in the armor. It was changed for that very purpose. So we wouldn't have direct taxes in the Constitution any longer. So, Section 2 of the 14th Amendment is unconstitutional and should be nullified in every state. That's the series, you guys, of the taxes. Now, I have in the book, in volume 6 again, when it talks about fixing the government, I have a significant discussion about direct taxes and indirect taxes, what it does, how it's done, why it's done the way it is. Significant discussion. Indirect taxes and taxes. Volume 6 in the section about how do we fix the federal government.
You do.
Next. Oh, what fun this is. What fun this is. Let's look at the 7th. We did talk about the 17th Amendment just a little bit, but let's look at it a little more clearly so we actually see what the 17th Amendment says. We did talk a little bit about it already. 17th Amendment. Come on, Richard, you know where you are here. 15, 16, 17.
Tomorrow we'll work on the colors.
Right.
All right.
Thank you very much. We'll get Cookie Monster to help us.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Senate of the United States shall be composed of 2 senators from each state. Well, that's good. That's what it is. Elected by the people thereof for 6 years. Hold the phone. It's supposed to be appointed by the legislatures of the Senate. So already we see the problem. Each state shall have 1 vote. Each senator shall have 1 vote. The electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous which of the state. Well, it doesn't make any difference. That's just the same thing. When vacancies occur, then the executive authority of the state shall choose somebody until the next election. Okay, you guys, the problem, elected by the people. Now I want to know. Well, first thing about that is the state lost its representation in the government. Right then, no more representation in the government. We still have people have representation, but the state has none. Don't you think the state, as one of the major forces that wrote the Constitution, should have some say? But they've lost it all. That's what that did. But let's talk about something more significant than it did. When the House was set up, when the Constitution was set up, one of the responsibilities of the House was to introduce all funding bills. That's one of their responsibilities. Now, the state can amend it, but the House introduces all funding bills. No funding bill goes anywhere if it wasn't originated in the House. Who do the House represent? Who do the representatives of the House represent? The people. They would go home during the year and they would say to the people, oh, this is the thing that I've been doing for you and this and this and this and this. And the people would say, we want more. Uh-huh. We want you to help Uncle Joe with this, and we want to help this company with that. We want to have a new road there. We want to have this. We want to have the other. All these expenses and all these things we want you to pass so we can have them from the federal government. Now, all the representatives wanted to get reelected, and they listened to their people. Well, they said, I know what I got to do. So when they got back to Washington, the representatives got together and began to pass bills that would satisfy the requirements of their constituents. And all the bills cost money. And most of the bills were contrary to the Constitution, were against the Constitution, maybe even all. I haven't read them, but I know that they were against the Constitution. So the Senate, the House wrote those bills. Send them to the Senate with pleased. Pick his tickled pink. We got that passed. It's in the Senate's hands. Yes, sirree. We've satisfied our constituents. We have done what they ask us to do. We can get reelected again now because we can tell them we did it. The Senate got there. Oops. It costs money. Direct taxes come from the states. If I pass this bill, said each senator, the state will say, you're out of here. Because you see, you don't have to serve six. That's just the term. The state could say, nope, you're out of here. Done. Get out. And they'll will appoint somebody new in your place. They didn't want to be fired. Just like Trump would do. You're fired. And I'll get somebody else to do your job. The state would do that to any senator that kept raising their taxes. Because all direct taxes went to the states. That means all the taxes over the budget went to the states. All the taxes that weren't raised by the imposts, excise taxes and imports and all that would go to the states. They didn't want that to go to the states because the states would have to pay more taxes. So they said, no, we will not pass it. And it never got out of the Senate. The people, the representatives went home and said, I asked for it all. It was those stupid Senate guys that stopped it. If they wouldn't have stopped it, you could have all these things. They did it. And the legislature said, yeah, we did to save taxes. We didn't want to raise your taxes. But the people don't hear that as well as they hear, you didn't get what you wanted because of the Senate. Guess what the goal was in the 17th Amendment in 1913. Tell these people how bad the senators are, and you can get rid of them if we just voted for them ourselves. And you can get them out of there, then we could get some of these things for you. And it passed. It was ratified. Of course, nobody looked at Article 5 to discover the 17th Amendment can't be passed because it's unconstitutional completely. Nonetheless, it was ratified. And here we are in a situation where the states have no representation and the people have two representatives. So the people then go to the senators and say, you want to get elected? You do what we want. And they go to the House and say, you want to get reelected? You do what we want. So they both said, we want to get elected. We want to do what they want. So the spending bills that were passed, exorbitant spending bills that were passed the Senate also, and went to the federal government. The president said, I want to get reelected too. And he signed them. And bingo, we began to create peacetime debt that was absolutely exorbitant. You can see it today. 26 trillion, some number like that. That's debt created because a lot of that debt's created because the Senate goes back to the people rather than to the states. And the states aren't given direct taxes. That's ignored.
And just to be clear, the national debt of today, which is just killing our country, is a direct result of the 17th Amendment, which is in violation of the United States Constitution.
Yes, you could say that exactly. Exactly.
All right, there we go.
You could say that those dominoes fall in exactly that way.
All right.
We could have a debt, but it wouldn't be $26 trillion. Right. It would be more like the one that Andrew Jackson gave his successor, 2000, or something like that.
Yeah, we can almost pay that off here.
Yeah, no problem. That's where it was. It was down to 37 cents a citizen. Now it's in the millions per citizen.
Right.
And that major part of that is because the Senate went to the people rather than to the state. And the direct taxes to the state were being enforced. The 16th Amendment did away with that because it put all the taxes on the people. Now the people are going to pay the taxes and the Senate can't stop it. Bingo, we've got the proper environment to have a Federal Reserve come in and create debt for the people to pay. And nice. Everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Except us.
Right. Yep.
That's why those two amendments showed up.
I find it very interesting.
So they could have the Federal Reserve. Without those two amendments, they couldn't have the Federal Reserve, or it wouldn't function properly. That was all planned, Jekyll Island, in 1910.
Yep.
Amazing. All planned, all laid out.
That's the best explanation, foundational explanation I've heard, I believe, for where we are today and why we are here today. It includes the change with respect to how we, elect the senators or how they came to be. The national debt, Federal Reserve, you covered it all. I mean, it's wonderful.
It all hangs together. None of this would work without all of it hanging together.
That's right. That's why folks, Liberty Series.
Every line of what Doug just said is unconstitutional. The debt's unconstitutional. The Senate's unconstitutional.
Yep.
16th Amendment is unconstitutional. Every bit of it. And if the states had the gumption, had constitutionally minded members, the legislature in every state could say, we nullify the 17th Amendment, we take our people back, it's unconstitutional, it's against the Constitution. Unconstitutional, we nullify it. Per Black's Law Dictionary, which says no amendment can change the contract. There's the basis right there. You don't have to do any more than that. Plenty of means, and you can do it within the state legislature, and you don't give a darn what the federal government thinks. It's not their business. The 10th Amendment. It's not their business. Have a nice day.
To your knowledge, Doctor, has any member of the state legislature body of states in these United States, has anyone ever come close to saying this?
Never. Okay. They're afraid to nullify. In fact, I have heard state representatives, not just state office, state officials, federal official shows up and says, show me this and this and this. No, those are state things. You're not authorized. Federal law supersedes state law. We're here. Show it to us. And they said, oh, okay, we will. And that's not true. But the state people all think it is.
According to my book, the proper response would be to say, bite me. Okay. Just
yes, that is the proper response. Absolutely.
All right.
But there's another problem. If you're going to nullify the 16th Amendment and you're going to nullify the 17th Amendment, the federal marshals will be sent to shut you down. See, nullifying the 16th Amendment means you're going to go in and lock the doors so the guys can't come to work in your state. Every IRS office have their doors locked. Can't come in. Well, the federal marshals will come in to enforce the federal law.
Well, that'd be a party then, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Now, the reason we need militias in the state. We're back to the Constitution again. The militia in the state would wander over to the federal marshal and say, why are you here? Well, we're going to do this and this. No, you're not. Here, get in the car. We're going to take you to the state border.
Get off my lawn. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's what the militia guys would do. They just escort them very politely and say, if you return, we'll escort you to prison. That's what they would do. That's what they're for. They're a state militia. They're not a National Guard, which will never do anything like that. They're a state militia. Iowa, Oklahoma, and Utah has a state militia, so they can do these things that I've just been talking about. And the federal government can't do a thing about it. But they can say, if you do that, we're going to cut off all your funds. You see how this all dovetails together?
Well,
it's the banking system I talked about a couple of weeks ago, which is a public citizens bank done in the state, out of the Federal Reserve, and all the money stays in the state to operate the state. We don't need the federal government. Go bite me. We don't want your money.
Okay, but hold on a second, because we're seeing some very similar things happen today. You've got the governor of Oregon. You've got the mayor of Portland, the governor of Oregon. You've got these states telling the marshals to pound sand, marshals and federal agents saying, no, you're not coming over here to our, you know, to fight the Black Lives Matter and Antifa. So if they can do it there, you know, then let's do it the right way. Let's do it. Hey, you use it for good.
Another item, everybody says the militia is represented by the National Guard. If I'm not mistaken, Portland refused, and maybe Seattle too, to activate the National Guard. Therefore, the National Guard didn't do anything either. They think it's their militia. It's a National Guard paid for by the national government, commissioned by the national government. It is a national organization. Hence its title. It is not a state organization. The government controls the state, the National Guard. So they would ask the government to send the National Guard in, and they did not. The government said, we'll send it in, and they refused the request. Now that shows the duplicity of the government in the state you're talking about.
I get this. Now I understand. Mystery solved. Isn't that interesting? Okay. So the National Guard isn't really the
No, it is not.
It's not the National Guard
organization.
Right.
It doesn't even have the right name.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, I almost said that wrong, but okay, yes, you're exactly right. Very interesting.
Now, go ahead.
No, this is fascinating. Folks, apply what you're hearing to the circumstances of today as well. And look at the foundation of all of this. This is very, very extremely, in my view, extremely much needed.
It goes right back to the Constitution, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's explained in the book, Saving the Constitution.
Yep.
Not in the detail I've just been explaining, but it's explained in the Saving the Constitution. I can read the paragraphs in a couple of minutes, but I can't discuss them in a couple of minutes.
Right.
So you can get the read by reading it, but you got to listen to the discussion to get all the little details.
There you go.
How it all intertwines.
Wow.
Now remember I said National Bank just a moment ago. You've got to have your own income in your own state. Stop sending all your income to the federal government. Keep it in the state. And make sure the federal government only taxes you using your Senate, only taxes you for your senators, I mean, only taxes you for things that you're willing to pay for. See how that works? That's what was envisioned by these gentlemen. They were inspired, or they could never have set anything up that's so complete, interlocked so well. Look at how many things come together in this small discussion about just a couple of items. The Article 5, 16, and 17. Look at how many things come together. And Amendment 10 that gives the states the opportunity to do all of this, because all of it is outside the Constitution's bailiwick. And gives them the opportunity to nullify amendments to the Constitution which are illegal. I don't care if they're ratified or not. Think about this for a minute. People say it's got to be ratified. No, that's not true. Let's assume that the 16th Amendment had been completely and properly ratified, which everybody says it wasn't, but they still have it. Let's just assume that, completely ratified. What happened right after that? I think it was a Pennsylvania railroad, may not be correct, but I think that's what it is, took issue with the 16th Amendment. And what? It went to the Supreme Court. What? Wasn't it ratified? Isn't it law automatically? No, they took it to the Supreme Court for permission to be ratified. If the Supreme Court in 1916 had said, no, this is not constitutional, it would have gone away. Therefore, anything could have had it go away. It's important enough, even after ratification. Ratification isn't the final word. Who's the final word? The people of the United States. That's the final word, not the Supreme Court either. But in the law we do today, we go ask the Supreme Court. And they could have said in 1916, no, it is not constitutional. You cannot do it. And we would not have Amendment 16 anymore. Think about that, guys. So ratification isn't the final word. The final word today is the Supreme Court. But today the Supreme Court overrides everything. So today it rests, the final word rests in the state, not Congress, not the federal government. You guys have control of the federal government if you would just exercise it. Have no idea the power of the states. Have no idea. That's because you don't know what the Constitution says, and you don't understand what the 10th Amendment means, and you don't understand what the 9th section of Article 1 means, and what the 8th section of Article 1 means, because nobody's ever taught you. And the only book you're going to find the explanations of these things is my book, There Isn't Any Other. You can't say, well, Uncle Joe's got a book. Nope, he doesn't. You go, oh, I know a guy who knows about it. Go ask him. I do. Every time a person comes up to me and says, or I hear about a person, or a person comes to me, I know the Constitution. I ask him a couple of questions. One of them really gets him. How many representatives should your state have in Congress? I don't know. How many should they have, I ask. I'm not positive. Well, they say we should have 6 or 8 or 9. That's what we have. You see, that tells you right off the bat that guy does not know his Constitution. Can the Senate be taken away by an amendment from the states? Well, yeah, Amendment 17 was ratified. No, can't be. See, he doesn't understand. Are there 3 modes to, or just 2 to amend the Constitution? Just 2. I had a teacher, let me say it this way. I had the organizer of a complete series of constitutional books made for homeschooling. She does a good job. Good person, does a good job. A complete series of books. She handed me a couple one day. We had a booth next to one another. She was selling and I was. And I read them and I went back and says, no, this is not right. This is not right. This is not right. This is not right. And this is why. She didn't change it. Another conference a year later, maybe a year and a half later, she came to me and says, Richard, where does it say that the Congress has power over the Supreme Court? She did not know. Well, that's not tough. Or you open your book, Article 3. Just go ahead, do it with me. Article 3. Go to where Article 3 says. And go to Section 2. And go to Paragraph 2. And read the very last sentence. People never read the last sentences. They stop in the middle. The very last sentence says, with such exceptions and under such regulations as Congress shall make. So, Supreme Court can look at things, but if the Congress tells them they can't, they cannot. That's what it says. Here's another interesting thing in this Article 3. Let's move to Article 3 for a few minutes. We've got all a few minutes.
Follow along
Let's
with
move
us.
To Article 3. Yeah, all we've right. got a few minutes. I've got an itchy nose here, guys. Just ignore this stuff. Okay, here we go. Article 3. I'm going to read paragraph 3. Paragraph 2 of section 2. I'm sorry. Paragraph 2, section 2.
Okay, paragraph 2, section 2.
We're going to read that right together. We're going to talk about it as we go. Remember, that in section 2, paragraph 1, it talked about cases involving ambassadors, public ministers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there are 8 powers of the federal, of the Supreme Court. Then in paragraph 3, it begins to define jurisdiction. And that is a very important word. In all cases affecting ambassadors and public ministers and consuls, and those to which the United States shall be a party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. Now, what does original jurisdiction mean? In easy words, that means the first court. There's no court prior to that, in easy words. So original jurisdiction means that you are the court for that item and no other court is. That's what that means. So now we go on to this. In all other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction. Now, what does appellate jurisdiction mean? Appellate jurisdiction means, again, appellate authority means that another court has already done it and you're doing the appeal. Okay? But remember, the only appeals and the only court things that they can see are listed in section 2 above. So if somebody wants to sue the city to take away their rights to Somebody wants to sue the mayor, doesn't like what they're doing, and the mayor says no, and it goes to the state court, and the state, and it goes all the way up to the federal court, to the Supreme Court. They have no jurisdiction whatsoever because it's not in section 2. They have no authority, no jurisdiction. So the appellate authority applies back to section 2. And the Supreme Court will have appellate jurisdiction, both as to law and fact. With such exceptions, you hear that? The Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction, both in law, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. I'm going to say that differently. It's exactly the same thing. Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction based on law and fact, with the exception and under the regulations of Congress. Congress tells us we can do it or not. That's what that says. She didn't know it. I had to show it to her. She should have known it as well as I do. She teaches this stuff. She's been writing books for years, homeschooling books. She didn't know. What does Article 3 really say? We haven't talked about that for a long time. We have about, I don't know, I'm looking at the clock here. It looked like we have about, I can't tell. Oh, about 16 minutes. I'm not sure exactly when.
We've got 23 minutes, actually.
23 minutes. Good. Thank you. Let's look at Article 3, all of us together. Just Article 3. We may not even look at any other. I don't know. But let's start with that one right there. The first three words of Section 1. The first three words of Section 2 are the judicial power. The judicial power. What does the judicial power mean? And it's stated twice, so they meant to say it. What does it mean? That's what the judges can do. That's what it means. They can't do any other power but what the judicial power says you can do. So let's see what the next sentence in Article, Section 1, Article 3. The judicial power of the United States. So the power of the United States, not the power of Oklahoma. Not the power of Idaho, not the power of Utah, not the power of Wyoming, the power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court. Now, isn't that clear? The Supreme Court doesn't have any power outside the federal court, the federal system, outside the United States. That's what that sentence says. And such inferior courts, oh boy, we have inferior courts there. What are inferior courts? Those are courts beneath the Supreme Court. Note, if you're reading, they're neither one capitalized. Therefore, they're not prominent courts. They're federal courts and can only do federal things. They do not have a capital letter that applies to you and I in the state. Period. The judicial power of the United States shall be invested in a court system having a Supreme Court and some inferior courts. That's what that says. The Congress can establish the inferior courts. Congress may from time to time ordain and establish inferior courts. we call them federal courts, but they're inferior to the Supreme Court in the hierarchy of the federal court system. No federal court in any state has any authority over any state matter. They have authority over federal court matters. But since most of the federal court matters are all international, they don't have any authority over any of them. Remember those things. Okay, here we go. Now let's go. The judges, both of the supreme, little case, no cap, and the inferior, no cap, shall hold these offices during good behavior. And men, as long as they're nice guys. There's a book called Men in Black. Now that's not talking about the movie Men in Black. This is a book about the Supreme Court because they wear black robes. Okay? The movie, I'm sorry. They shall hold office during good behavior. In that book, he points out about 11% of these guys should have been impeached because how bad they've been. Next, and shall at stated times receive for their services a compensation. They're going to be paid, which shall not be diminished while they're in office, but it can be diminished after they're not in office. Wait a minute. What did that just say? That just says the term of a Supreme Judge Court is not for life. Because there's a period of time after that they continuance in office implies non-continuance in office. Therefore, that sentence says not be diminished during their continuance in office. They start at salary of $100,000 a year and they end at $100,000 a year. They could end at $120,000 a year, but it won't be less than $100,000. That's what that says. But it does not give them a life sentence. And there's nothing in the Constitution that says Supreme Court officials can stay for life. All it says, or must stay for life, or are supposed to stay for life. All it says is that they've got to stay, they can hold their office during good behavior. But if they don't have good behavior, then they're supposed to be left. And Men in Black says 11% of them should have been out. Now I want to put something on good behavior that he didn't. I think it was Mark Levin that wrote that book, but I'm not positive of that. But the book is called Men in Black. Anyway, I'm going to point out something he didn't point out. If a Supreme Court justice goes to Europe and comes back and says, I'm going to regulate the laws of the United States in accordance with the laws of Europe, that Supreme Court has violated its constitution requirement, therefore should be impeached. Should be impeached right there. That sentence. Just that sentence. And if any decision that they make goes against the Constitution of the United States, they should be impeached just after that sentence, after that instance. Not the majority, the individual. So if the individual goes into court and says, we uphold the fact that California can close their churches. That's constitutional. That goes against the Constitution. Therefore, that person should be impeached for that decision. We shouldn't have to wait for the 5 and 4 stuff. That decision is enough to call it not good behavior and be impeached because they're not following their oath of office to support the Constitution. They're changing it. That's not supporting it. They're ignoring it. That's not supporting it. So every Supreme Court justice that files for these kinds of things should be taken to court by the House of Representatives the next day. They don't have it for life. Interesting, isn't it? That's section one.
They don't have it for life.
Nope. That's just been done. The number of
That's just been done.
Yeah, they just did it. It was just happened. I don't mean just this minute.
No,
I mean
but
in our history, they just did it.
In modern times is what you're saying.
Well, it's been that way for an awfully long time. Marshall was there till he died.
That's true. All right.
But I can't pick a date. when they decided not to do that or when they made that change.
That's kind of like one of those things that just happens that we just,
yep,
it just happens, just happened. You know?
We just did, yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, that's how it works. That's just happened. No life turn here. Doesn't say that at all. In fact, continuance in office implies a non-continuance in office. Therefore, it's not a life term. Right there. And that's how the Supreme Court is supposed to read the Constitution, by the way. If it says continuance, that means it could be a non-continuance. That's how they're supposed to read it. But they're supposed to read the Constitution.
Paging Justice Roberts, please pick up the white courtesy phone in the lobby. Okay. All right. Yeah.
All right. Now let's go into section two. What fun this is. What fun. I can't believe it. Oh, I'm just having a ball. I hope the people out there listening are having a ball too. This is the way you should know. You should know these things. Here we go. The judicial power, that's that sentence again that I talked about earlier, shall extend to all cases in law and equity. Now, what does that mean? Law and equity. All cases in law and equity. It means that they're supposed to look at the law to judge the case. All right? They're supposed to look at the law to judge the case. I'm going to turn over to Article 6, and I'm going to say, the Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made pursuant thereof, are the supreme law of the land. Therefore, the Supreme Court is supposed to be looking at the law, not their opinions. The law, not their biases. The law, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. Not the state constitution, this constitution, federal action, not state action. See how clear this is? The laws of the United States and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. Whose authority? The constitution first and the laws of the land second. You'll also find this phrase, treaties which shall be made or under their authority in the Sixth Amendment. But it means this, the Article 6. But it means the same thing. It means the Constitution is the foundation, and all laws must be made in accordance with the Constitution, and if they are not, they're null and void, and that's for the people and the states to decide, not the Supreme Court. And the states would decide it by nullifying the laws within their states, because it's not constitutional. Okay? Now, that's how the constitutionality of a law is supposed to be done. Jefferson said, it's supposed to be done by the people. And if they don't know it, you don't take it away from them, you teach them. That's what he said in his letter of 1820 about the Supreme Court. So anyway, so here we go. Now, then it has a dash because we've got down to it. The cases. Now it's going to define the cases because it says all cases, comma. Then it goes, there's a couple of other things in there. Then it says authority. And now it says the cases. So it's going to define the kind of cases that they have to do law and equity. That's what's happening here in section 2 of Article 3. All cases affecting ambassadors. That's not tough. Consuls, public ministers. I've backed those up. I said those backwards. Okay. And then notice you have in your little item, you have a semicolon and a dash, or at least a semicolon. Some people don't write it quite that way, depending on who you get your thing from. I use the information from the Idaho, let me just read their name exactly if I get it right here. Because it's done by the National Center for Constitutional Studies in Idaho. They are felt to be the major provider of the information. They interpret maybe, but mostly they just print constitutions that are accurate. So I take their constitution as being accurate. But even so, they missed the 13th Amendment was lost in 56, 18, 1858, not 6, lost, gone. Anyway, I don't know where it went, flew out the window. All cases affecting ambassadors and other public ministers and consuls, semicolon, dash, to all. Notice that said it, to all. Now we have two more words, to all. So these are new cases. To all cases, controversies, to which the United States shall be a party. Now, what kinds of things are the United States a party of? The United States is a party of things within their jurisdiction, within the federal government, that they are a party of. One of the things that they are a party of is the 16th Amendment, United States, because that's a federal amendment. So they would have been a party to that. So they have original jurisdiction. How about that? Have original jurisdiction. They don't have appellate jurisdiction, original jurisdiction. And they're supposed to follow this book. Anyway, so there you go. Oh, I skipped one. I made a mistake. Oh, perish the thought. I made a mistake. Back up to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction.
I was wondering if you were going to mention that. I didn't know
I had to back up. All right. It's very important. Sorry, I missed a phrase. I'll repent. Okay, I've done repenting. Okay. And repentance, you know, means move closer to Christ and be accurate and be good. But anyway, so here we go. All cases of admiralty and maritime authority jurisdiction.
Right.
Now, what's maritime and admiralty authority? Ocean, folks. Oceans. Oceans. And maybe a few other ports that might be construed as ocean, but I think we've even elongated that beyond what we should. Deep water, that's oceans, that's maritime. A captain's on a ship out in the middle of the ocean.
Right.
In these days, he had sails. There's no other authority. He's in charge. There's nobody else. And it's life and death. So here he comes, you're in the middle of a storm, and you go to a guy and say, hey, all hands on deck. We got to go up, you guy. I want you up on the top royals to furl those sails. We got to get those sails furled. This ship will founder. No, I ain't going. You ain't going? What do you mean you ain't going? No, I'm not. Too dangerous up there. I'm not going. Arrest this guy. Throw him in the brig. That's his authority. That's what maritime authority, admiralty authority is. And everybody knew it. Captain of the ship is the final law. Admiralty law. Maritime law. That's what it's talking about. Original jurisdiction. That's the kind of thing that's in the original jurisdiction.
Now, that's not to mean, and I've seen this, and it makes my head hurt. Well, we're under admiralty law because of the gold-fringed flag in the courthouse.
And it's a decoration.
Right. It's like, what's wrong with you? You know,
And just because you say you're in admiralty law doesn't make it admiralty law. The Constitution decides what's admiralty law or not, not the flag.
Thank you. Yes.
I could hang a flag of a Nazi symbol, but that doesn't make me a Nazi court. That just makes me have a flag of the Nazi symbol.
Makes you an idiot. I mean, yeah.
Yes, does that too. I understand. Yeah, that too.
But anyway, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right about that gold fringe and an admiralty court.
But I've seen this so many times, and this is at the periphery of that sovereign citizen ideology.
Yes, it is.
You know, which is, it's actually perverting exactly what you were saying about the Constitution to meet a certain agenda, but I won't get into it, but thank you for that clarification. And then thank you for, because I was wondering why you skipped over that specific phrase. I'm thinking, oh, man, but no, you're right.
Yeah, you did. I missed it, guys. I missed it. Sorry about that. I missed it, but I admit that I missed it. I know I did. I go back here and I spend six pages in the appendix talking about admiralty law and jurisdiction and admiralty and maritime law. Six pages in the back. Just that subject had to be treated better.
Yep.
So, admiralty law. What is an admiralty law court? It's where one person has all power. That's what it is. One person has all power, even to the defense and the prosecution. But we bend that a little. So here you are. You got a traffic court. You got a traffic ticket given to you by a traffic cop because you were going too fast. Oh, well, how about that? Where's traffic court? You go see the judge in traffic court, don't you? Look over on the side. Is the jury there? No. Traffic court doesn't have a jury. Just a minute. We're going to go back to that speeding law. Let's go to the Seventh Amendment for a minute. We don't want to miss these. See how this all ties together? Let's go to the Seventh Amendment. Let's see what the Seventh Amendment says about this. In suits at common law, not maritime law. Isn't that what that says? Admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, which means authority, which means law.
Yes.
It doesn't say suits at admiralty law. It says common law. And then it defines what can come to a common law court, where the value in the controversies shall exceed $20. Now, I know that's not the same denominal value as we had in 1787, but the concept is the same. What that says is you can't just take anything to court. It's got to have an injury or a loss. That's what that says. If there's no injury or loss, you can't have a controversy exceeding $20. The controversy is $0. Uh-oh, no jurisdiction, because you're in an admiralty court, because there's only one official and no jury. Therefore, you're in an admiralty court. They have no jurisdiction. Therefore, it's a federal court. Therefore, you can go home. They don't have any jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction, period.
Well, that's in theory, though. And this is where it gets a little bit sticky, I think. I mean, I agree with that 100%. I mean, I have to, because it's in the Constitution.
You know, yeah, you said it's in theory, and you're absolutely correct. That's just theory. It's not in practice.
Right.
They'll throw you in jail if you do that.
Exactly.
Just like the captain of a ship. But I didn't see any waves. The judge does not have that power. Contempt of court is an admiralty court law, not a common law court. The jury's in charge, not the judge.
Very interesting.
The judge just oversees, make sure the law is followed.
So
he doesn't decide.
So when I went in, when I reportedly went through that red light in New York State, and I was in the courtroom in front of a judge and the police officer and the prosecutor, but no jury, in theory, I could have said, you know what? Goodbye.
Oh, you know, in law, you could say that, because the Seventh Amendment says you can have a jury trial.
But somehow I think I would have been in the cell next to Bubba.
Yes, because we, the people, you and I and everybody in this country, says it's okay.
There it is.
Do not know what's going on. Therefore, we allow these things to happen. The judges even will suppress evidence.
Yep.
What's going on here? Are we after justice, or are we just after something? Our system, the blindfold has been removed decades ago. We don't have any more justice. There's no such thing as a traffic court, because there was no injury. You can go 90 miles an hour. You haven't caused any, but you might, but I didn't. Since I didn't, there's no case. There's no jurisdiction. Show me the injury, no case.
That's no body, no crime. In a sense, 90 seconds, by the way, 90 seconds. This has been so fascinating.
Did I almost shut off again?
I tell you what, man.
I didn't think we'd get to the end. I thought this would never take the time it's taken. Are you guys getting the picture? Just let me end with this 90 seconds. Are you understanding that the reason we're having all the problems we're having with government is because we don't have the information to know what to do and how to do it, and nobody has any nerve to do it as a group? Do it as a group. They can't arrest everybody. Do it as a group. Make the government conform to the Constitution, but you cannot do that unless you've read the Constitution and you've read it closely, so that you understand that continuance implies non-continuance also. Thank you.
Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. That's ProvisInstitute.com. Liberty Series, Saving the Constitution, Bathroom Economics. They're all there. ProvisInstitute.com. Thank you, sir. What a great program. I appreciate you. Folks, go to HagmanReport.com, HagmanReportLive.com. Find the video audio and HagmanStore.com for coffee. Good night. Tomorrow, Steve Quayle. Good night.